back there. Hey, great restart, bud. Great job.
Wow, was that close or what?
Second in front. Try to catch that group. Don't worry, I'm pushing like a hell.
Is it undrivable? There's puddles, aquaplanes everywhere. Unbelievable.
Behind you, very close. Okay, okay, Adam. It's fun. Okay, Timo, keep going. It's fun. It is done. On post.
Sunshine, well done, well done. Pole position, fastest lap, and the race win. Jump done. Take that. Well done, Sunshine.
Hello and welcome to the first ever PlanetIRL.com podcast. I'm your host Cole, and alongside me today are two fellow motor racing fans, Declan Brennan from Midweek Motorsport, and Pat Watton from TooMuchRacing.com. How are you guys today?
I'm good. I'm glad to be here, I think. Yeah, how are you?
I'm very good too, and I'm delighted to be here, and how are you? But it's Midweek Motorsport at RadioLamont.com as opposed to Midweek Motorsport.com. But thank you for having me.
Well, I'll be sure to cite that. We're going to talk about some F1 racing today with you guys. I saw earlier that Max Mosley has announced that he formally won't run for re-election and wants Todd to step in for his position. What do you guys think about that?
I'm not a fan of him, really. I mean, I suppose it'd make it an interesting contest, but I think pretty much, well, I and everyone is more of a fan of Harry Rattan, and I never liked Todd even when his Ferrari days.
There is a problem, of course, with that, but with all liking Harry Rattan and nobody liking John Snow. The problem is, of course, that Harry really liked John Snow because they were heavily, obviously, intertwined in Perser Talbot Sport racing and rallying in the the 70s, but particularly the 80s. And Harry was a charge of John Snow. John Snow was his boss. And Harry was telling me, let me see, we'll be going back to, this is the 1998, when he was effectively driving for me because I was sponsoring him on the Rally of Finland. And after the rally was over, we were chatting, and I was asking him about his favourite people in motorsport, and he said, hands down, it's Jean Todt, because Jean Todt basically was the first person to call him after his accident on the Rally of Argentina and told him that it didn't matter. As long as he survived, which was touch and go at one point, there would be a car and a drive for him whenever he recovered. Of course, John Tull put him into the Harry Dakar Rally program, in which he dominated for a couple of years in the mid 90s. So
you're expecting him to come in in support of him then?
Well, I think Harry's definitely going to run, but the idea that he'll be completely independent and will be a total, you know, sea change from Max Mosley is lovely in theory. It's just not quite likely in practice, I think. And that's maybe me being a little bit cynical, but I'd love to think that he's going to come in and completely sweep the whole place clean and focus in a different way and maybe look at other sports. And because don't forget, the FIA does have a huge remit across all the motorsport, and it isn't just an F1 organization.
Well,
it does seem quite fortuitous that he just appeared at the exact right moment as well.
I think John's problem is he's too focused on the commercial side, just like Max Mosley. He's not focused on the racing like we need.
Well, you see, I think that's the beauty of Ari, and that's a very good point, Paul. I think that's the beauty of Ari. Ari has had a long time away from the sport. He hasn't got a financial stake or any specific stake in it other than a desire to improve the sport in general and bring it, in all fairness, he's got a very eco-friendly attitude and he's got very green in his thinking, and I think he'd want to make a lot of changes to bring motor racing broadly in line with the issues of the tree huggers in all respects.
Yes, I agree. And also from Germany this weekend, what are your thoughts on Braun? Is Braun slowing down or is Red Bull speeding up? What do you think about that situation?
Red Bull speeding up, I think. They had a lot of new parts on the car in Silverstone, and they're generally bringing it all together. And
because Ross Braun's team was so dominant early in the season and couldn't be touched, and now they seem to be just midfielders. Why do you think that is?
Well, it's two words. It's Adrian and Newey.
Yeah.
I think we all agree on that.
Yeah, and don't forget, that car was pretty competitive. With Paul Rudd suspension, that was designed to be a different solution to the issues that the double diffuser solved. If one thing Adrian Newey was guilty of this year was not necessarily finding that loophole the way Ross Braun did, but they provided a different answer to the same question with the Paul Rudd suspension.
Yes.
At the back of the car. But then if you add that, and that was pretty successful, but if you add that then to the double diffuser and all the other general aerodynamic issues that are being solved week in, week out by him and his team, it's not no surprise that they've caught up. And the other thing, it's easy to forget that we all tend to focus, and you hear this all the time, and it's easy to say, oh, it's all about the car, whoever's in the best car. No, it is also a question of, they have two very, very good drivers. I saw one comparison this week between Mark Webber and Nigel Mansell, and it's actually a really good one, a late bloomer.
Really?
Mm. It's a really, really good comparison in terms of career progression. It took Nigel Mansell a long time. It took him 13 years of Formula 1 to get a world championship.
I did see a comparison between Webber and Häkkinen as well, because he took a long time to
win
a race.
Yes, he did. Yes, he absolutely did. And somebody like Keke Rosberg almost... not quite the same, but wouldn't be far off. And they have got two very, very good drivers. I mean, it's easy to overlook that when we start talking about who's the best designer and who's got the best car. Yes, absolutely. Maybe the cars are equal. Maybe they have two drivers that are now capable of winning. I think one of the issues is that Button is taking the team on board, and Rubens isn't doing himself any good by sort of his mindset meandering in the wrong direction.
He's probably be feeling boxed in, even if it's not true.
I don't agree. I don't think Webber is nearly as good as some of the drivers out there. I think Vettel is the next Schumacher myself, but I don't think it's all the drivers either. Pat?
Sorry?
What is your opinion on the Braun troubles?
I think they're just having a bit of a... a lot of what's being said at the moment is they're having trouble with the tyres and the cold tyres. So I think the drivers are a bit struggling a bit with that more than anything.
Well, it was very noticeable. That was very noticeable on the Grand Prix, but at times, even on the track in the middle of the race, after the pit stop, that Button was trying to get the heat in some tyres. I suppose one thing you would say is that they probably weren't expecting to have such cold temperatures at this time of the year, and they have had those problems in the Grand Prix. And that, you know, if you're basing your car development and on, you know, a specific development curve during the summer, you're probably expecting to be racing in better temperatures and in better conditions.
Mm.
On saying that, don't forget they had a year to develop this car. And because they did no development on the Honda last year. And it does happen. People do catch up. The cleverer teams will make progress. And they were never... I think it's impossible for people to think that they were going to continue to be able to continue to develop the car at a level that they've done at the start of the season. Because effectively they had 8-10 months to do that.
Mm, even if they'd kept the same rules, they would have made a big jump forward, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, absolutely. Don't underestimate Ross Braun.
That's true. last year they did absolutely nothing to that car, and look at them now. And Ferrari's been talking about stopping their development on this year's car and doing the same thing, and that seems like a pretty good idea. So.
Oh, yes, they've learned an awful lot from last year. Absolutely.
Yes.
And I would worry if the rest of the field, if Ferrari are giving up on a car and deciding to move forward at this point. It also says something about, if that is true, it also says something about the mindset about the whole idea of the split. It's probably not going to happen.
I don't think it is.
It's probably not going to happen. If they're now thinking about developing the car for next year, they're not doing so and then moving into a different championship.
The split is not going to happen. I don't think it will at all. Because
no, I don't think it will.
They don't have time to write a whole rule book. I mean, the FIA rule book has got to be several thousand pages long, and they just don't have the time to even start that, let alone everything else that goes into it.
No, I mean, they've been preparing since January, apparently, behind the scenes, roughly. So they might have gone... They might have made a lot of progress, but I don't think it would be as developed as the Formula One rules. I think they would still be arguing about things halfway through next year if they did split. So I think it's going to be more trouble than it's worth.
That's why we need someone like Ari in charge, because we need to get rid of the people that look at the commercial side only. We need racing bosses.
And while Ari's there, you can also get rid of Super Rallying and give us back 5-day rally that if you crash out, you're out with them. And rallies at proper times of the year, and the rally, and all the other things we could bring back, and proper touring car regulations, and all sorts of other great stuff, and a proper sports car series.
Yes.
All the FIA series are in a complete mess at the moment.
That's true. We need a world sports car series again, a world governed sports car racing series.
Let's hope so. Although that would, I think that's in the pipeline, with the idea that there's a preliminary version of that in the works, insofar as they're talking about creating an international championship, not a world championship, but an international championship of the major events across the world. So we'd have Fuji or Suzuka, we'd have Sebring, Petit Le Mans. So it would be the blue ribbon events that the major teams would focus on, which is fantastic, because it would then guarantee that we would get superb entries in the USA, particularly at Sebring and at Petit Le Mans, which is exactly what people want, because sports car racing is very exciting at the moment.
Yes, it is. We need an F1 of sports cars. There are too many sports car series, just like there are too many lower level open wheel series, but there needs to be less racing, basically.
Oh, absolutely. Less series. You're absolutely right. I wouldn't argue with that at all. That's absolutely correct. It's absolutely ridiculous. Formula Master, Formula 2, Atlantic, Indy Lights. It's no different on either side of the Atlantic. Absolutely. And where do you spend your money? You know, if you have a certain budget, who do you spend it on? Which of the championships that are going to be watched by the Formula 3 for years was the absolute yardstick. If you won in Formula 3, you got into Formula 3000 or Formula 1. If you won in Formula 3000, but now we have World Series by Renault and blah, blah, blah. It's all very tedious.
It's just too diluted. I mean, that's where I got my blog name from.
it's
too much to follow, and there's too much for the team, the higher-up teams to follow to look for new drivers, and it dilutes the talent pool, and we've got all these other people who shouldn't be there, perhaps,
like
coming in.
Like Yami, whose last name I won't even try to pronounce.
Jaime Alguersuari.
There you go. That guy.
he'll be good in time, but not yet.
Not in my driver's seat, he won't. He's taking the seat of a four-time Champ Car champion. That is absurd.
It's not absurd if that four-time car champion can't beat his 12-year-old teammate, which he hasn't done on a regular basis. And that is the problem. In any form of motorsport, the first person you have to beat is your teammate.
Yeah, and he's struggled too much, and he's taken too long.
Absolutely. You can't use excuses. It took him last year to get used to the car after driving the champ car for so long. It just doesn't wash anymore. And unfortunately, that's the way Formula 1 is. Look at Nelson Piquet. After three races in his first year, they decided he wasn't quick enough because he couldn't beat Fernando Alonso. Who was going to? And then suddenly he's racing with the sword of Damocles over his head for the rest of his career. It's absolutely insane.
Well, Mr. Brennan must now leave us. He has to go over to his show Midweek Motorsport on www.radiolemans.com. So I hope you've enjoyed it. I sure have. Goodbye, Declan.
Cheers, Cole. Great to have you. Great to have me on. Sorry. Great. Thank you for having me on. You know, in fact, it was great to have me on. I thoroughly enjoyed myself.
Yes.
And, and hopefully any of your fans will give us a listen at www.radiolemans.com. And that is Midweek Motorsport, and I'm off to go live in 6 minutes. So take care, chaps, and let's do it again. Sure.
What is your take on the F1 season so far? Should there be an asterisk beside it since it's the regulations are so changed? Or do you think it's just any other season but the regulars aren't at the front?
No, I think you get these changes of regulations every now and again. So, I mean, it changes up the order. That's just how it is. No, I've enjoyed it. It's been a very good season so far. We've got different people at the front, different people at the back.
Luckily, Lewis Hamilton is one at the back.
Yeah, which has been interesting to see how he deals with that.
Or Kaiki Hovaloven or whatever his name is over there, you know.
And the twist to that is that McLaren and Ferrari are starting to catch up now. So it's been interesting to see them develop. And at the Nürburgring, they didn't show it in the race, but in qualifying, they were top five and six.
So. Yes, Lewis Hamilton led the first or second practice, I think, which is amazing considering his pace so far this year. The ones who really surprised me are Williams and Nico Rosberg. I think Rosberg will be champion one day, and it'll be sooner than later.
Yeah, he's a good driver, and Williams have spent, well, I'm a Williams fan, so I'm bound to say this, but they've spent far too long away from the front.
Yes.
But yeah, he's a very good driver and he deserves a good run. And I saw an interview with him with the BBC at the weekend. He said his contract runs out at the end of this year and he's looking for a top team. And he was saying he expects Williams to be that team next year at the rate they're developing. And I hope that's true. It's another different team at the front and makes it more exciting. Like Red Bull.
I'd also like to see, since Raikkonen, I'm pretty sure as of now, won't be at Ferrari next year. I'd like to see him or Alonso maybe taking Raikkonen's place at Ferrari.
I've seen the rumours for however long it's been now, over a year, I suppose. I still can't quite believe it. I think Raikkonen's got probably another year. I mean, I don't know if I can see Alonso at Ferrari. He doesn't seem that kind of driver. I'll have to say that again, actually. I keep losing my thread. Give me a think a minute. Yeah. I'm not sure I can see Alonso as a typical Ferrari driver, like in the modern sense of the word, like Schumacher was.
I could see him there likely, but he would have to be the lead driver. We saw how that worked out at McLaren with Hamilton. He would definitely have to be the lead driver on the team, and he wouldn't accept anything else. And I think Rosberg would be okay as the second driver.
Rosberg at Ferrari, that's an interesting... possibly. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I can't see Massa accepting it. Ferrari would accept it, but Massa wouldn't, so I don't see where he would go.
If I'm Ferrari and I'm looking at dumping both of those drivers. They need a change there because what they have now is not working. Massa has one podium, I believe, this year, and Raikkonen has none. And I think they have the pace to do better than that.
Yeah, I think, to be fair to them, that's more down to the car. I don't think the two drivers are making as many mistakes this year as they did last year, even though they were faster last year.
Yes. What about... So who has impressed you the most this year in racing? Who is that driver that stands out as the one who has really surprised you this year?
In F1 or everywhere?
Everywhere.
Everywhere. It's a big plate. Well, I've been focusing on F1 this year because I have a lot of other commitments, so I've had to drop a few things. So,
yes.
Within F1, definitely Brawn as a team, Red Bull as a team, and Vettel as a driver. I mean, we kind of got a glimpse of it last year, but he's really shown it consistently this year.
Yeah.
He hasn't quite proven he can overtake at the front, but he can lead.
As we saw at Australia at the beginning of the year, he proved that.
Mm. Yeah. Thinking elsewhere, I suppose in Justin Wilson in IndyCar in an unfancy team coming through to win.
Yes, that was
a good performance.
It was, considering how much of a reject he was over in Formula One. That was
he was still a rookie at the time.
such a miserable failure that was, to be honest. So
yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, he had some good drives. I mean, when he was in the Minardi, I think he had some good, relatively good drives. In the Jaguar, he was a bit.
I think everyone was a bit in the Jaguar.
Yeah. So yeah, I think that's more the team's fault. Well, the team had a lot of problems, but.
So same as with Minardi, but you know, Alonso proved that Minardi can move. So.
Yeah, and so did Mark Webber.
Well. Mm.
He at Australia in whatever year it was, he took the slowest car in the grid to fifth position without any power steering, so that was quite impressive.
The problem with Mark is he's inconsistent. He can show moments of brilliance like he did Sunday, or he can just lay around at the back. He needs to work on having good finishes every week.
Yeah. I mean, he's long had a reputation for being a very good qualifier and not much of a racer, a bit like Trulli, but better.
he's not a mobile chicane like Trulli is either.
Well, yeah, he's better than, yeah. But I think he's improving a bit. I mean, hopefully this race win will kind of unlock something in his brain,
yeah,
as it does with some drivers, and it'll kick him into doing more.
Like the button in Australia, I think something just clicked there and he's,
yeah, I mean, I think when you have a dominant car, that helps a bit.
Well, he just has the mentality. He's not doing stupid things that are like, you know, Lewis Hamilton or something, or Kaiki Hogalogan or whatever his name is. So.
Yeah, I'm not going to correct you because that's funny. but then he got into a bad car and it just didn't really come on from there. But I think his driving in his car didn't.
Yes.
But back to who's impressed me during the year. I suppose. I've lost my thread again.
Maybe Sutil or even Nakajima is doing better than usual. Yes, I agree. So I think that should just about wrap up the F1 segment of the PlanetIRL.com podcast. I want to thank Pat Watton from TooMuchRacing.blogspot.com for joining us, and of course Dex from Midweek Motorsport for also joining us at the last minute after we had a few problems there. We're going to move on to the IndyCar segment now. So, welcome to the IndyCar segment of the PlanetIRL.com podcast. We will be joined by Paul Dalby and Lisa Kinney for this segment. Say hello, guys.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you guys today?
Doing well, thanks.
Doing good. And
good. So, let's start right off with this week's headlines. Danica, Paul, that's your girl. She toured the Stuart Haas race shop down in North Carolina on Monday and met with the various team officials. What's your take on that?
I felt for the last several months that if she was going to go to NASCAR, and I still don't think she's going to, but if she was going to go to NASCAR, the only place it made sense for her to go would be to Stuart Haas. She's made clear she only wants to go to somewhere where she can win right away, which basically means she's either going to Hendrick, she's going to Roush Fenway, she's going to Haas, or she's going to Gibbs. If you look at Roush and you look at Gibbs and you look at Hendrick, all three of those stables are full. They've already got four drivers. They're going to be, I think Roush even has five. They have to reduce in the next year. The only place that has space available is Stuart Haas, and I think they've taken the approach. They're going to start small this year. They just had the two cars. With the success they've already shown, it makes sense for them to want to go to three cars next year, if not four. So that would be the only logical place for Danica to go. So from that standpoint, I'm not real surprised she ended up at their shop. I still don't think she's actually going to go to NASCAR. I don't know that Stuart Haas has a nationwide program, and I don't think Hendrick does as well either. So the only way she would really be able to get some nationwide experience in this year was if she if Stuart Haas partnership with Junior Motorsports or something that already may have some alliance. I don't see her jumping 2 feet into the Sprint Cup to start next year. She's going to need to do something this year.
Yeah, we saw that with Sam Hornish and how that worked out, which was not well. So
right.
I think if she's going to do it, she's going to have to work her way up, not just jump right into the big leagues.
Right.
I think as well with Dario Franchitti, too. We saw him come back after a season.
That just failed miserably. I think he had a broken ankle after a crash. So
after about eight races, wasn't it? No, it was at Talladega, I think.
Yeah, it was Talladega. He got hit and broke his ankle, so he came crying home. Also in the news are the schedule changes, which include Kentucky being moved to Labor Day. That's not the most popular move, and New Hampshire is supposedly wanting that date. Las Vegas and Barber Motorsports Park are also looking at dates on the schedule. I support that. We need more American ovals like that, like New Hampshire and Las Vegas. I don't know if moving Kentucky is the right thing to do for that, but I think it's a better than adding more street courses. What do you think?
I think Kentucky will be a tell-all. We'll see what they do with the more downforce they're talking about. Unfortunately, I feel we've gotten to a point where we've seen the past couple of road courses have actually been pretty more entertaining than the ovals that we've seen this year. So I think a tell-all is definitely going to be Kentucky and see how they do there. I mean, I personally would like to see more ovals and not have it turn into, you know, just CART where it's nothing but street courses. But, you know, I think we can all agree that they do need to do something to make those a little bit more competitive. And, you know, hopefully that will be solved in the coming two races.
And at Kentucky, they're talking about changing the wicker on the rear wing, taking the rear tire scoops off, which I've supported for a long time, and maybe the exhaust system, too, because of the aero effects it has. What do you think about that, Paul?
Well, I think they obviously need to do something. The races at Kentucky and at Texas were unfortunately not what we had grown accustomed to seeing. I don't know enough of the technical details to know what it is that needs to be changed. The only things that seem to be locked down this year are the wheelbase and the exhaust. If you look back at last year, I mean, Chicago was a great race last year. One of the better ones they'd had there for a couple of years even. So if it does come down to the exhaust or the wheelbase, I think they need to open them up. And they've done a good job of opening up the things for Kentucky that aren't going to require a financial commitment, which is something that none of the teams can afford right now. These are all parts, like they said, they're parts that have been used before. The teams have them in their inventory. They have the data, the research on them. It's just a matter of flipping the switch more than anything. Hopefully the three or four things they're going to try at Kentucky are a good first step. I'd be surprised if it really gets us back to where we really want to be, and I'd be surprised if we didn't see more things opened up for Chicago. But I think it's a good first step. I'm glad that the league is listening to the fans and the folks that are saying that they're not happy with what they've seen this year, and they're not happy with having nearly absolutely identical cars. It's almost like an open wheel IROC series out there now.
Mm-hmm.
And the fans aren't happy with that, and I'm glad that the league is taking note of that.
I think that what they need to do is each week tweak it just a bit, like the rear wing angles have been increased so much over the last few years. Look at Texas. A few years ago, they were going 225, 230 there, and now they're going 211 in qualifying, and that's because of that rear wing and because of the power they're taking off. And they need to just tweak that from race to race to keep the teams guessing, to keep them on their feet, I think, would help a lot. Don't let them get used to the status quo so much.
Oh, I would agree with that. I think if they, you know, Brian Barnhart often talks of his the laws of unintended consequences. So you need to make sure that, you know, a few degrees here, and wing angles and extra downforce there, whatever the case may be, make sure that those aren't going to have unintended consequences on the tires, on the engine longevity. You know, but maybe it'd be good for the tires if we had something to break them down a little bit more. You know, I don't think anyone's really pleased with seeing tires that, you know, are lasting two and a half to three fuel stints.
Firestone is a great partner. They do a lot of sponsorships and stuff, and unfortunately their tires are too good. Make them wear faster, or maybe do the option tires on ovals is something I've always thought of. They need to do something soon, or else there's going to be a lot of consequences, and we're going to lose a lot of fans. So, yeah, they need to change that. Also, this week we had Las Vegas has said they have interest in coming back on the schedule. Also, Paul, we were talking earlier about where would they go? Because we need an oval earlier in the season, and they have in a NASCAR race early in the season. So where do you think they should go, and do you think they should be on the schedule at all?
Well, let's hope that they're talking about the oval. Last year, New Hampshire came up, and it came out that Las Vegas came out and said the IRL wanted to run the road course in their parking lot. So let's hope that's not what they're talking about.
Yeah.
But in terms of the oval, what we need is an early season oval. Unfortunately, the NASCAR, the Sprint Cup Series, is there. I think it's their third week, which would put them about the end of February, 1st of March. So really, that knocks out all of March. You're looking halfway through April. If you're looking to start the season, I think they're talking about starting early March in Brazil. Now you're still 6 weeks out from an oval, which you're probably going to get St. Pete. You're probably going to get Long Beach in that 6 weeks. So you're still starting with three road courses. Now, I think you need one oval before Indy, at least. And which gets us really back to where we are now.
Yeah.
Just basically replacing Kansas with Las Vegas.
And Kansas is not the best racing action in the world. It's a great facility, but it's just, it's a one-lane track. It's turning into the next Nashville, in my opinion. So what about maybe moving Kentucky earlier? Since they don't want that Labor Day date.
Kentucky doesn't want the Labor Day date? I thought they're lobbying for it.
Oh, I've heard people, fans saying, mainly Will McCarty from Is It May Yet, has said that that's a terrible idea because that same weekend, Cincinnati has too many things going on, so your big population center there is already busy that weekend, so maybe Kentucky or Motegi, move it back to the earlier part of the season again.
I think you could draw on a lot of people, though, with the Labor Day weekend that aren't necessarily in that immediate vicinity. I mean, with the three-day weekend, so that could be a good choice. I mean, I would opt to just even put Homestead back before St. Petersburg.
Well, then there's too many events in Florida right there on top of each other.
Yeah, it was it was good there for a few years, just go back and forth. You're already in town. Just drive the 4 hours over to St. Pete.
They need to just take Homestead off. They ruined that track. It was so much better when it was flat. Then they banked it up, and it's the same thing with Las Vegas. They ruined it when they added the banking. So
I actually disagree a little bit. I enjoy the Homestead track.
I enjoyed the original Homestead back when
the triangle?
Back when it was the mini Indy, back when it was the quad oval.
It's had like four different configurations. So.
Yeah, I think they're on their third now, but the original one was a scaled-down version of Indy, a mile-and-a-half version.
Yeah.
They had some issues with some safety. I think the accident angles, they didn't like those. But, you know, those original kart races on that track, I love those. I agree. I'm not a big fan of it now, the way it is.
Also, I wanted to get your opinion on which driver... I asked this to Pat earlier in the F1 section. Which driver this year has impressed you the most?
The one that's impressed most? I would say Will Power would probably be my vote.
There you go, Lisa.
I know. Cole knows. That's my boy. And I absolutely agree. I mean, Toronto was just amazing going, you know, messing up that first lap with that incident, going down to dead last and still coming in third. I mean, pretty impressive. I think there were other good runs even from, you know, people like Matos and stuff initially. I mean, some of these newer guys are showing some real strength, I think. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, not only this year, but how they progress.
And yeah, I would say Matos would be the best, in my opinion, the most surprising driver on the grid. Also, Ryan Hunter Ray is doing good. He finished seventh this weekend in a Foyt car on a road course, which is unheard of.
Now, that car had some good runs with Darren Manning a couple of years. They finished second at Watkins Glen a couple of years ago, I think. And
That was the race that Ryan Hunter Ray won.
That race was
weird. Was that
2 years ago? I thought he was second there. He was running well at St. Pete for a good chunk of the race until he fell out of the seat a few years ago. And so I don't see the AJ Foyt car being that big of a surprise on the road course. I think if there's anywhere he is going to excel, it's going to be a road course where the driver can kind of overcome AJ's engineering deficiencies.
I agree, and I think we saw that dynamic even last season with a lot of the kart guys coming in and seeing it this year as well. I mean, obviously their strengths, I think, are the road course. So the more, you know, some of these guys can get up to speed on ovals, it'll be interesting to see in the long run, you know, how their overall point standings would do for an entire season. But I think a lot of them definitely have the advantage on the road courses.
And another big surprise, I'm looking at the point standings right now, is if you look in fifth place, you see Danica Patrick in fifth in points, and she is, I don't think she's ever been that high this far into a season, so I think she's really working on her consistency and her not just pushing it all, running it as hard as you can mentality.
Yeah, I think anybody would be lying if they said they weren't a little bit surprised about where Danica is right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to look at that team, she's had by far the most consistent and best season. Obviously, TK's had some bad luck with the suspension failure at Indy and the fire at Milwaukee, but it's a new Danica this year. She looks totally different than she's looked any other year. She's much more aggressive. Before, if you watched her on the ovals, she would like to run a medium low line. She wasn't always on the bottom, but if she ever got pinched down on the bottom, she backed it out of it. She would lose two or three positions. This year, she's really keeping her foot in it. Kind of led to the tiff with Marco at Texas.
And Marco's really one to talk about over aggressiveness, may I state. So.
Yeah, I seem to recall him
also at Texas last
year. Shutting
the door
on somebody at Texas last year and ending up.
That was Ryan Hunter Ray with only a couple laps to go there. So, she's also, if you've listened to past seasons to her onboard radio, she tended to whine a lot. The car's not doing this. The car's not doing that. And she's not anymore. I think it might be because Michael Andretti's on the pit box now. She's taking the blame for her own problems now.
I think she's figured out more what she needs in the car this year. I think before she was whining because something was wrong with the car and she didn't know what she needed. I think now this year she's matured a bit. She knows what she wants. So instead of just saying, my car is slow, she's able to communicate now and actually tell them what it is that she needs. And I think that's been a big difference for her this year.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Where was I? I'm looking at the Toronto finishing positions, and besides Patrick and Ryan Hunter Ray that surprised me, I also see that Taglioni really just got... His race was ruined after the pit problems he had. He was running second, I believe, at one point, and he ended up in ninth place. Weldon had just a terrible weekend also. Toronto, in my opinion, was the best race of the season, though.
I don't know. What do you think? I don't think anyone could argue with that either. And it pains me to say that as an oval person, because, you know, I typically preface every rating I give of a street course by saying, you know, the fact that it is a street course means the highest it can get is a B. But Toronto blew out anything we've seen this year. A lot of passing, there's on and off track skirmishes. Toronto was, you were able to pass there. You were able to push your way past some people there. And I thought from start to finish, it was just a great race.
I agree. It was very much a driver's race. You know, we saw competition, I think, for pretty much the first time this season at full scale with a lot of people, you know, really pushing it. A lot of the drivers getting aggressive at points. And, you know, it turned out to be like you said, probably the best race of the season so far.
And it was not bad back in the Champ Car days either, especially when it gets wet. That track is a very entertaining place to watch a race. And some street courses are bad, but a lot of them, if you pick the right street courses, they're okay. I've always been an oval person, but if you get the right street course and it's laid out correctly, like a Long Beach or a St. Pete, it is a good track. So, anything either of you'd like to add to that?
I would say there have been more bad street courses than good.
yeah.
But I like Toronto. I think St. Pete's a good one. Long Beach, I'm not a huge fan of. We're not going to get rid of it, but it's not my favorite one by any means. But
go
ahead.
I think they need to add. I think they need to take the Champ Car idea, and add the power to pass, or something to add more power to these cars, at least on the road courses. Not the ovals, don't get me wrong, but on the road and street courses, they need more power and less grip. That's what made the kart road races so good back in the day. They had those huge turbos that gave them like 900 horsepower with little tiny front wings. So they need to add power to pass or take some of those huge front wings off and help the road racing that way. Make the cars harder to drive.
I don't think the IRL right now needs to do too much with the road course package, to tell you the truth. I think it's you look at their product on the street courses, and it's been pretty good this year. If they have something actually right now, I think
this is the thing they do have right.
I think the Logan Streets is what they actually have right now.
Mm-hmm. The cars are just so tall and so heavy. These cars were from 2003, and they were built for oval racing. And then in 2005, when they added St. Pete and Watkins Glen and Infineon, they just kept the same car and put more wing on it, and that is what's led to the problem we're having. So in 2012, when that new chassis comes out, it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I agree. It will be interesting, especially if we're looking at radically different designs, like Brian Barnhart said last week. Is that radically different in the sense it's going to be a much more of a road racing car like the GP01? Is it going to be much more of an old school car like the USAC cars of the early 70s? It'll be interesting to see which way he's actually going with that.
What I think they need to do is, I've always supported multiple chassis, but I don't think that's going to happen. I think it's just going to be Dallara again, but maybe have a bunch of different options for each car. Like, you get your Dallara main rolling chassis, but you have 10 different choices of side pods or 5 different rear wings you can use. So there's variety, but it all is cost effective at the same time.
I'm going to throw this out here too. I mean, what do we think of even more competition in the engines themselves? I mean, right now we have all Honda. I don't know how much that would play into as well if we had, you know, some different engine sponsors and setups coming in.
Well, I don't know what would be really, I wish they would open up the engine rule so that you could run an inline 4 turbo versus a V6 turbo, or put a twin turbo on the inline 4. When you get those types of different engine configurations, now your chassis can be radically different. If you look back to the late 80s, early 90s, when Ford came in 92, with Lola the Cosworth. Built a very different chassis for the Ford than what they had for the Chevy A engine, they called it at the time.
Yeah.
It was a very different chassis. So they're both called Lolas, but they really, you know, from the tub back, they were totally different chassis.
And those cars were hideous, may I add.
Which ones?
The early 90s Lolas.
I don't know. Those were some of my favorite cars. I loved those.
And those goofy-looking little front wings that were like envelopes coming off the nose there. I'm not saying that these big cow catchers on the IRL cars are much better, but we need to find a happy medium there. The cars should look like they're going fast, even when they're not moving, is my opinion.
Yeah, the Lolas from the mid 90s, particularly the Lolas and the Reynards. You know, IndyCar.com had posted that video of Bump Day from 96 or 95.
I watched that.
And those cars, they just looked significantly faster, and they were only 10 mile an hour faster than what we're looking at now. They just look snappier. They snapped into a corner. They snapped out of it. They shot down the straightaways. Like you said, they just looked like they were going faster.
And I liked Indy better before they added those pit-in lanes, you know, with the apron. You had twice the racing room. You could get around the outside. But then Tony had to come and mess up my track and get the stock cars in there and... I think that really hurt it. And then they put those rumble strips in. Don't mess with it if it's good.
Well, you have to remember in 92, when they had the last year they had the apron, you had Nelson Piquet who destroyed his feet. You had Mario Andretti with broken feet. You had Jeff Andretti with broken feet. You know, how many crashes in the race you had that year. Joby Marcello was killed that year.
If you remember the weather, you were telling me earlier, the weather really did play a big part in that because the wind and the cold.
It did. The weather played a part in causing the accident, but the result of the accidents were they had too much time to rotate. They all rotated back around and went in head first. The way the cars were at the time, the driver was pretty much sitting on the front wings.
Mm-hmm.
There were just so many feet and leg injuries that year. They had to do something with the track. They're never going to bring the aprons back. They've had the best racing in the 500 history since then, I think.
Well, that's not the track, though. That's the cars, in my opinion, because they've made the cars closer. Now they're too close, but they need to put the apron back. Take out the lane. I don't know if they want to do that because it's for safety, of course, but the lane around the inside. So they need to do something to change the racing at Indy, and they need to get it back on record-breaking pace because that is what made Indy what it is. It was the new track records, and now they're slowing the cars down. If they were going in the 235 to the 240 range, your qualifying crowds would be huge, and the race cars would be huge, and that's what made Indy what it is pushing the limit. And now we're going slower, and that just, I think that hurts it a lot.
I would agree. I think they need to get back to higher speeds, but if they were going 300 miles an hour, you're never going to get the qualifying crowds that you had before. There's just too many other options now and things to do. You know, it's broadcast every day now is broadcast online for free. People have no incentive really to get out to the track right now.
Well, I'd sleep there every night if I could, but.
I agree. They need to get the speeds back. The 220, 225, it just seems low when you've been so much higher. 235, 240. You know, if you can qualify at those, and maybe they'll do that with the next cars, you can get the qualify at 235 and 240, but you can't race that high. You know, whether it's, you know, dramatically reduce the dependence on the aero downforce and increase mechanical grip.
Yeah.
Whatever that is, cause it so you can't race that high. You know, if you can get race speed in the 225 to 230, that would I think that would be something that the league would be pleased with.
Maybe take the wicker off for qualifying and then put it on for the race. That might make it faster without messing with the engine. I'm looking at the starting grids from 2008 and the one from 2003. Dixon, who was on the pole in 2008, was at 226. That would have put him in row 6 in 2003. So just in that amount of time, it's dropped so much.
It has, but remember 2003, you had Brack's accident. You had...
Renna.
You had Renna. Renna was killed after the season. They had to... At that time, they had to slow the car. That was the last year of the original 3.5 engine. They went to the 4.0 engine the next year. And you had to see the speeds come down. And they got to the point where they were comfortable with the speeds then. They've done some chassis alterations since then. And I think they can probably bring them back up now.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you had to see that reduction after the 2003 season.
2003, in my opinion, 2001 to 2004 were the best years for IndyCar racing, the IRL. You had the best action, the best drivers, and the best tracks. Those were the glory years for IndyCar.
They were good years. It's hard to, I think the last several years have been just as good in terms of the championship season. Everyone's come down the last race for the last 3 or 4 years now.
I agree.
And maybe the race, you can go back, look at that string between 2002, the last year of the old chassis, up through maybe 2006 or so, when you had that whole string of close finishes, when you were disappointed by when somebody won by a car length.
Yeah.
I mean, you just can't maintain that. And remember then as well, all the drivers complained then that they could get next to someone, they could never pass anyone.
Well, it was a lot better than it is now. That's all I can say. So, am I missing any more news? I don't think
you haven't touched on the Elio and PT controversy yet.
Oh, yes. I knew I forgot about something. I love to stir the tank like that. I'm going to get your opinions, then. I think you all know mine already, but I'll go ahead and reaffirm it. So let's start with Lisa. What is your take on the incident there?
Well, I think, you know, they both obviously were a little bit aggressive going in that turn. I'm actually going to side with Cole a little bit on thinking it was a little bit more Paul Tracy, probably. I don't know that he would have had enough room to make that pass. Sure, Elio may have cut into him a little bit, but I think Elio was pretty much, you know, on par to take that turn. I think Tracy got a little bit aggressive, and, you know, we can call it a racing incident for sure. I think both of them were trying to go for it. I think, you know, Dario had already gotten by Elio, so, you know, maybe he could have backed off some, but, you know, as a driver, why are you going to back off and give that second spot to another one? So I think they were both aggressive. I personally think Elio was in the right, and I'm sure I'll get a lot of crap for that, especially by the Paul Tracy fans. But
we broadcast in Canada.
Yeah, I don't think I'll go up there anytime soon. But you know, I guess I saw what I saw, and you know, I'm gonna go with Elio on that one.
There aren't any PT fans in the world that like me now, anyways. So I really have nothing to lose. Paul, what was your take on it?
I think I have to agree. As much as I hate it, I would have to say it was just one of those, it was a racing accident. If I had to lay blame, I would say it was probably a little bit more PT's fault. I think Dario was gone at that point. Nobody was going to catch him at that point.
No.
You're racing for second place. Elio was clearly slower. Turn three, now to PT's credit, turn three was the best passing zone all day. And that's where you really needed to make your move. But if you didn't get it done the first time, there really wasn't a need for him to push it at that point. He had plenty of laps left to get past him. Elio was clearly slower at that time. I think Tracy could have backed off and got him the next lap, and all would have gone on their merry way. And we wouldn't have nothing to talk about then.
No. Well, there was also the Thomas Schechter incident, and we had a lot of fun with that on Twitter yesterday when Thomas had a fender bender on regular roads, and he cited that. So I think Thomas is the next PT, and he makes a lot of bonehead moves, but he's what we need more of. He has emotion in the car. He's not like Dixon or Briscoe that are like wooden blocks with a steering wheel in their hands. We have enough doorknobs in the series now. We need to put more emotion into it. We need, as much as I hate to say this, we need someone like Kyle Busch. And I hate Kyle Busch, but we need someone that's gonna give emotion to the racing.
I just always think of that season Schechter had. What was that, 2005 or 2006? You know, I mean, he was really in the standings with a lot of those ovals, and then it was always, you know, I don't know if it was just being aggressive or passionate about what he was doing, but it seemed, you know, he definitely didn't have the luck on his side, but, you know, he definitely is a great driver. He's strong. It was just kind of a shame what happened in Toronto. He was doing pretty well during that race.
And I know his brother Hugo is listening to this, and his brother is the coolest cat ever, and so I just want to give him a shout out there. So Dario won, and we got the obligatory interview with the missus, which everybody just loves. Anything else you guys want to talk about, or is that about it?
I think we've covered most of the stories going on right now.
Okay, I think we have two. We'll now move on to our interview with Daniel Harrington, so stick around. Joining us now on the PlanetIRL.com podcast is Indy Lights driver Daniel Harrington. He sits currently, I believe, 7th in points, and he finished 9th at Toronto this week. Congratulations, Daniel. Want to say hello?
Yeah, thank you. Toronto's kind of a tough weekend for us starting from the back, but 9th is a good finish for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw that. So I interviewed you at the beginning of the season and got your thoughts on some things, and I was just going to do a mid-season checkup, basically, for lack of a better word.
Okay.
So how would you rate your season so far? What things have you done well, and what things do you want to improve on?
Well, we need to improve on finishing higher than we have been. We've been really consistent. I think that's something we've been doing well, is consistently finishing in the top 10. I think we've only had one finish outside of the top 10, which is at Milwaukee. But we've had, you know, consistent results, but haven't been as fast as we wanted to. So we really need to work hard on trying to focus more on that top 5, top 3 area, and see what we can do to get ourselves up there.
Where do you want to be? Where does Daniel Harrington see himself 10 years down the road? Do you want to be an Indy, or do you want to go F1, or what do you want to do with your racing career?
I'm pretty fond of Indy, actually. That's kind of why I'm in Indy Lights, is because I'm being the IndyCar series, and, you know, I want to race in the Indy 500, and I love the kind of mix of street and road and ovals that we do in this series, so this is really where my heart's set.
Okay. Paul, do you have anything to ask our guest here?
I do. Daniel, good to talk to you.
Yeah.
You know, you hear a lot of the young guys that come from the go-kart ranks, in the road racing backgrounds, talk about how they need to, you know, get their feet wet on ovals, yet it never really seems to take most of them too long to get up to speed on there. What do you notice is the biggest thing? What's the difference between an oval being an oval and a road course with 4 left turns?
The ovals, they take a lot more patience kind of on the setup side of things, because there's a lot more to it. A lot more of the setup can affect the speed of the car. So, you know, I know for myself personally, one of the biggest things was trying to figure out to make that transition between figuring out what I need out of a good qualifying car and what I need out of a good race car. There's a big difference there, and trying to predict, you know, a car that will stay consistent and stay with you that you can drive and all over the track and in traffic, that was the hardest thing for me to figure out, and I think is the hardest thing for most rookies to figure out. So I think it's not too hard to adapt when you've got a good car and you kind of quickly pick up the sense for what a fast car is, but one that's consistent and easy to drive in a race is a different story.
And is that something you see, you know, every time you go out on an oval, especially this year, now that you've really got a full-time ride, you know, Brian Herta obviously was a fantastic driver both on the ovals and the road courses, someone coaching you now. Is that something you see that you continue to pick up this year and a focal point that you look for going forward from this point?
Yeah, you know, at the beginning of the season, that was my biggest concern, was trying to figure out what I needed in a race car. And after talking with Brian and getting a lot of his advice, he kept on preaching to me, you know, go with your gut, go with your instincts, and they're usually right. And so I've been working on that, and when I felt kind of comfortable and relaxed in the car, I said, you know what, this is a good race car. Don't touch it. Let's go from here. You know, Brian's definitely led us in the right direction and can give me some good advice on what I need for a good oval race car.
So on the subject of Brian Herta Autosport, will you be there next year? What's your status for next year?
I certainly hope so. We've had the past two races haven't been our best races of the season. We've kind of struggled a little bit with a couple different issues, but we're hoping to rebound off those in Edmonton and start a strong run of finishes here for the end, and hopefully I can be with those guys next year, because I think it's got a great potential for the future, and it certainly doesn't hurt to be associated with someone like Brian Herta.
No, it doesn't.
And Brian's made it known, it's no secret, that Brian really wants to take Brian Herta Motorsports to the big cars. You think you're ready to go there yet, or is another year in lights something that you think would be valuable to you as a driver?
Well, we've talked it over some, and I think certainly more experience in Indy Lights will probably help. I think that, you know, if I were to make the step to the big cars, I could do well, but it just wouldn't be consistent results, and that's really what you need. You need to be ready to do everything when you get to the big cars, and taking a little bit extra time to learn is never a bad thing, I think. So, you know, I think I could do reasonably well if I jumped up next year, but I think it's probably a smarter move to wait an extra year if I have that luxury.
Okay. What about just like the Indy 500 next year? Would you be willing to do that and maybe step up for one race? I saw that Brian Herta had an entry this year for Indy. Was that supposed to be for you, or can you tell us anything about that?
I can't really talk to you about that entry for this year, but certainly for next year, that will be kind of a goal to start mixing in, you know, the Indy 500, and potentially if we can find some funding, a few other IndyCar races to get ready for 2011. So I think that'd be the ideal situation. If I could run a full season of Indy Lights and do a few IndyCar races, that would be perfect to me, because I think it's really important to get some experience in big cars without the pressure of running a full-time season.
Mm-hmm. So what is it about Daniel Harrington that is special? What is it that – why are you different from everyone else, and why does that make you better?
I think one of my strengths is kind of the thought and effort I put into it. You know, I graduated with an engineering degree this year from NC State, so it kind of keeps me level-headed and keeps me always thinking about ways to improve and ways to get better, both with myself and with the engineering of the car and with the team. So I'm kind of always sitting here thinking, how can I get better? How can the team get better? And, you know, I never take a day off from doing that. It's the first thing I think of when I wake up in the morning. So this is certainly my passion and my goal, is to make it as a driver in the IndyCar series, and I'm going to do everything I can to make that happen.
Very cool. Very cool. Paul, do you want to...
I don't know how you found time to do an engineering degree in racing. I have engineering degrees from Illinois, and it was all I could do on my weekends to get ready for the next week.
Yeah, I'll tell you, it was pretty busy.
Yes. Do you have any other questions over there, Paul?
Well, my question, kind of outside the racing scene, but directly related to it, from the Indy Lights standpoint,
What's the shakeup from the Indy Racing League, the administrative side in the last month or so? What's that doing, do you feel, to the Indy Race or to the Indy Lights series? Not necessarily as a series, but how is it affecting you in your search for sponsors? Is it creating confusion, apprehension? What's that doing from a sponsor standpoint?
Well, I think certainly in these kind of early stages of the shakeup that it's created some confusion and some worry about, you know, how we go to approach sponsors and what exactly it is we're selling, because it's not quite certain. But I'm 100% certain that the IndyCar series is going to be around. The Indy 500 is not going anywhere, and Indy Lights isn't going anywhere. So I think once we can get kind of our feet set and get some direction within the series, that the series will still has a lot of potential to do well, and we can go out and sell it to sponsors and bring some of those bigger sponsors into the series. So, but for the meantime, I'm trying not to think about it because I'm working on winning races. So that might be something I'll worry about in a month or two.
If you win enough races, the rest will fall into place.
Yeah, I hope so.
One last question from me. What advice do you have for young American drivers that are looking for a seat in a series dominated by foreign drivers? What advice would you give to the go-karter that's trying to make it up the ladder?
Well, it's difficult, but I think there is definitely an opportunity for Americans in the series, and you know, I don't think there's any gap in talent between South Americans and Americans. It's just kind of way that the state of affairs right now. So I certainly wouldn't be giving up hope. I think there's lots of opportunities. People still want American drivers in the Indy 500, the biggest American sporting event each year. So I see no reason to be worried about it. I think that there's a good crop of American talent coming up, and I hope to see a lot of them in the IndyCar series soon.
Okay. Paul, do you have any more questions at all? Or?
That's about it from me.
Well, I want to thank Daniel Harrington from Brian Herta Autosport from joining us today.
Thank you both for the interview. Sorry I was late. I forget, and I certainly did. I was in the middle of working out. So.
Thanks for taking some time.
Yep, no problem. Anytime.
Okay. Good luck to you guys for the rest of the year.
Thanks a lot.
I think that'll just about wrap it up here for the PlanetIRL.com podcast.
And it's upside down. We've got a car upside down. It's Marco Andretti.
Marco, you okay?
There are actually 7 previous winners of the Monaco Grand Prix starting in tomorrow's race, and 4 of them are Michael Schumacher.
All right, pit this lap. Watch the speed limit. 3, 2, 1. Watch right here.
A lot of people here are really debating whether Ricardo Rossi is Formula One material.
Well, that's a fairly short debate, Murray. I am so annoyed. I can't tell you how annoyed I am. I just can't believe that we had the problems that we had in Brazil. And I come here and we have even more damn problems. So, you know, the car should not be where it is.